Hey everyone, this is Robert here, and I work for David. I'm a part of his team. I'm the guy that's been sending you guys all of the notification emails about this call. And I'm really excited that y'all chose to join us tonight, and David's on the line with me here, and I know that he's really excited as well. So for everyone that's just dialing in, again, this is Robert. I work with David, and I'm going to be moderating the call and helping David out on the tech side of things tonight. And we're really excited that you're here. So David, you want to say hi to everyone here, and maybe we should unmute the line and let everyone say hi and where they're from. What do you think?
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, hi, everybody. I'm David Bach, and I am coming to you live right now from New York City. So, Robert, thank you so much for getting all the technical elements of this set up and for launching us off today. We're super excited to do this call. I'm really grateful to everybody who's here. And, yeah, let's open up and have everybody say hi and just tell us, just say your name and tell us what city you're calling from.
Awesome. Everyone, you should be able to hear each other right about now.
Hi, I'm Mark from Berwyn.
Hi, Mark. Welcome.
Diane.
Hi, Diane.
Amanda.
Welcome.
Amanda Hofstetter from Annapolis.
Amanda, welcome from Annapolis.
Thank you.
Sharon from California.
Sharon from California, welcome.
I'm Christy from Chicago suburbs.
Christy from Chicago suburbs. Well, I love that. Welcome. So far we're hitting all parts of the country. This is great.
Sylvia from Queens, New York.
Queens, New York. I can almost feel you. Welcome.
Chloe from Seattle.
Hi, from Seattle. Welcome.
Yeah, and congratulations on doing so well in your contest.
Well, thank you so much. You guys made it. You helped me make it happen. I'm so grateful to all of you for clicking on the little vote button over and over again. All right. Well, people are being bashful. I know there's a lot of you on this call. I know we had about a couple hundred of you register. And so what I thought I'll do is let me just jump in. And then this is the plan for our VIP call today. I really wanted to, Robert, why don't you mute everybody and I'll just kind of start talking and we'll open up the lines in a little bit. Are we good with that?
You've got the floor, David.
Okay. So first of all, everybody, thank you for being on this call tonight. We're going to go from now until 8 o'clock unless there's, I'm going to take as many questions as I can in the next hour or just let you share your stories. But the whole purpose of this call today really was to say thank you. This call you've only been invited to this call if you signed up for our special VIP voting group. We had about 1,000 of you really amazingly sign up for our VIP voting group for this contest that I was a part of to be the number one favorite financial expert of 2017. And while we didn't win the whole thing, I came in second place, I feel like I won. Just going through the contest with all of you, hearing your success stories. So many of you have written to me, you've emailed me, you've commented on Facebook, letting me know how my work has helped you. That's been the biggest gift of all, doing this contest, quite frankly. And I'm just really, really thankful to you for being a part of that. We ended up with 50,900 votes, which just blows my mind away. My wife said I should run for office now that she saw how many votes I could get. That's not going to happen, but I'm very, very grateful to all of you that did show up and vote and that so many of you showed up and voted over and over again for me. So thank you. And my goal with this call was, we wanted to come up with something extra we could do that was intimate that we would invite you to and just basically say thank you and give a chance for some of you to get to talk to me today on the phone, maybe ask some questions, and basically be here to add value to you. So that's my goal. I thought what I would do is kind of just give you like a little recap of where we are at the very moment in terms of the economy, the markets, what's happening right now. It's a very interesting time. I don't know how many of you joined us for the Facebook Live chat. I talked a little bit about the Trump bounce and how strong the markets have been. And I just thought, I'd start with that, and then I want to share a couple success stories. Then a bunch of you emailed me questions. I'll go through a couple of those questions. Then I'll open up the phone lines, and you can get in the queue, and you can either ask me a question, or you can tell me a success story, or just say hi, whatever you want to do. So that's what we'll do. So you know, the markets right now, and a bunch of you asked me questions about the markets. This has been an amazing, really, 90 days. I mean, since the new president was elected, you know, when you go to the night of the election where it looked like Trump was going to win and the futures were down 800 points, a lot of people, I think most people, candidly, were very fearful that if Trump was elected, the markets would actually drop. In fact, one of the questions that came in that I'm going to go to was specifically about that. People made predictions that if Trump was elected, the markets were going to drop. They were going to drop 10, 15, 20%. And so there was a lot of fear. And in fact, that evening of the election, the markets did drop significantly. The thing that shocked, I think, most people, and certainly I would say the financial experts out there, because almost everybody on Wall Street was predicting a market decline, was that immediately the next day the markets rallied. And they have now rallied to a point where we've never really seen numbers like this. And the markets are up over 3,000 points since Trump was elected. It has basically been a straight, constant uphill run. You know, we really have not had any of your typical pullbacks that you normally see. We were over 21,000 up until a couple days ago. And, you know, we crashed through 18,000. We went straight through 19,000. This is on the Dow. We went through 20,000. We went through 21,000. And people keep saying to me, you know, David, is this real? Well, you know, real is a relative term. It's real for right now. What I can tell you is that there's obviously an enormous positive, even though there's a lot of negative energy around this current president, there's a lot of positive energy around the economy and the belief that the changes that are coming could be very good for job creation and for the economy as a whole. The numbers that just came out from ADP on the jobs numbers are, you know, candidly, they're kind of staggering. I mean, you're going to see this all over the media tomorrow. The job numbers came in for February, 289,000. They were expecting 190,000 new jobs. So it's like the strongest job numbers that we've seen in, I mean, like long time. Now, one reason is, this is the first month of job numbers since Trump's been elected. So, like, really, you know, nothing's actually happened yet since Trump's been elected. Why are these numbers going up? And the answer is that corporate America is feeling more bullish about where they see the economy going and where they see a lot of the work flowing from, and that is leading to employment pickup. So I don't make predictions. I can sit here today and tell you what I believe is going to actually be accomplished by this president, and I'm really not here at all to be political in any sense or really any sense at all. I'm really looking at this from just watching it and going, you know, this has been remarkable. And with that all being said, when times get this good, I've been in this business long enough to know that this is also when you don't get greedy and you start to rebalance your portfolios and be prepared for pullbacks, because pullbacks happen, and we haven't seen pullbacks recently. So preparing yourself for the fact that this won't necessarily continue this way, and be prepared for pullbacks, because pullbacks are normal. And I just thought I would talk a little bit about that normalcy, because I'm the director of investor education for a financial service company that I'm the co-founder of, and we've been talking about this a lot with our clients and reminding them that if I go back and I look at the history of the market since 1900, we typically have seen since 1900 markets pull back 10% at least once a year. Let me just say that again. Since 1900, we have seen markets pull back on average 10% at least once a year. Now, an important thing to hear when you hear that is to hear this. On average, when the markets pull back 10%, they recover in less than 2 months. And so you've seen me, you know, typically when the markets are getting hit, I'm the guy that gets called. I'm the guy that's always doing the TV shows and going and shooting the videos on Facebook and saying, okay, now I know things just got scary. Don't panic. Because what I know from history is that when markets go down, markets recover. And they usually recover much faster than people expect. In fact, the last major correction in the market was last summer. It was Brexit-related, if anybody even remembers Brexit. And I was out in the Hamptons, and I was on my bike going for a ride, and I literally at the beach shot a video from the beach, put it on Facebook, sent it out to my community, telling everybody to not panic and telling you that that creates an investment opportunity, because when things go on sale, that's a great time to buy. And in fact, the markets recovered really quickly right after Brexit. But I just want to be a realist here and tell you that the real secret, and it's funny that I'm starting this call talking about these detailed things on investing. The real secret to building wealth over your lifetime is you invest simply, automatically, every 2 weeks when you get paid for your entire life, and you do that in a well-diversified portfolio where you watch the cost of your portfolio, but it's diversified, it's diversified, it's diversified, and it's boring, boring, boring. And if you build yourself a rock-solid investment portfolio that's diversified, that is boring. You can ride out good markets and bad markets, because I can tell you for a fact that trying to time the markets, trying to predict when markets will go up and markets will go down, is a loser's game. It does not work. And that's why, if you've been following me for as long as I've been doing this, which is going on almost 25 years now, if you've been reading my books, some of you have been reading my books now for well over a decade, you know that my opinion on this has never changed. And, a lot of what I've done this year as a result of, in the media, has been a result of re-promoting, excuse me for a second as I sip of water, has been re-promoting the Automatic Millionaire book, because I put the book back out, completely updated it, but primarily the updates were all related to taxes, investment accounts, the new financial service companies, and all the new technology that makes automating your financial life easier than it's ever been. And there have been a lot of changes when it comes to investing in the last 10 years. But like 85% of that book's timeless advice. So I didn't have to change any of the timeless advice because it all still works. And so with that, what I thought I would do is start off and read a success story that came to me. Actually, this story came to me on Sunday. Some of you who are probably on this call have sent me your stories. Whenever you send off an email to someone, you never know if they're actually going to read it. And I always say in the back of my books that I do read every story that comes my way. I can't always promise you that I'm going to get back to you personally. I just couldn't possibly do it because we get so many of them. But I do get your stories, and I do read them. And on Sunday, I got a story that I just thought I would read to you. And I don't know if Amanda's joining us today or not. I sent Amanda the number to call in, so if she's here, it's great. We might get to say hi to her. But here's Amanda's success story, because it's such a remarkable success story that I thought it'd be fun to start off with her story. And this is why I love what I do. It's the best part of my career has been, at this point in my life especially, is hearing from so many of you how my work, writing a book that went out to you however you got it, has had an impact on you and helped you have a better life. So that's why I do what I do. That's what I love about what I do. So this letter came to me.
Amanda's actually here if you wanted her to share her success story. She just raised her hand on the call.
Oh, wow. Let me just read a quick part of her story, and then let's open it up and let Amanda talk for a second.
Awesome.
Because that'd be great. So Amanda sent me this story. It came in on Sunday. And she said, says, "Dear David, congratulations on your newly updated book, The Automatic Millionaire. What a great read. I read TAM when it was hot off the press." By the way, I love it when people use the acronym. "More specifically, I wanted to thank you for sharing your wisdom and the wisdom of your grandmother in Smart Women Finish Rich. Because of Smart Women Finish Rich, of which I read back in 2003, I was able to get out of an abusive relationship that lasted a heart-wrenching 6.5 years of my young life." And Amanda, I'm so glad that you did. And she says, "You see, after reading your book, I created a master plan to get my life back better than ever. I was able to pay off all my debts, save $2,000, and finally break free of the abuse that I endured for way too long. Battered and emotionally wrecked, I had pulled myself up by the bootstraps to make myself a priority. Now I'm 38 years young." I love that. "I have put myself through undergraduate school at the University of Maryland, College Park, graduating in 2008. Currently, I'm finishing my master's in the art of teaching, art education at Corcoran College. designed George Washington University. Graduation is slated for May 20th, 2017. Congratulations. And there's a lot more to this, but she says, thanks to your grandmother and you, I was inspired to help myself. Where I am now would not have been possible without the both of you. And she goes on to write, I have great hopes in large part due to your grandmother's legacy. I love her and you and owe you both great thanks, so thank you. And one more thing you put here. My future career as an art educator with a side hustle keeps me inspired and proud of myself. If I was able to break free of debt and poor circumstances so long ago, I know that I can do it again, and this time automatically. So I got this email, and there's more to this email. Since Amanda's here, I wanted to say hi real quick. But, you know, this email came to me on Sunday, and I was flying to Madison, Wisconsin, because there was a death in my family, and my parents were rushing to meet at the funeral. And I was very emotional, obviously. I've been emotional the last 3 days, but I was emotional on Sunday. And I immediately emailed Amanda back, and I forwarded the email to my father, because my grandma Rose is his mother. She's passed away. And I said, you know, Dad, you got to read this email. I sent it to my mom and my dad, which amazingly, because of technology, they were able to read it on the airplane. And when my dad met me off the plane, he was basically like in tears, saying, I read the email. I can't get over that story. It's so amazing what my mom's work, you know, that you were able to take my mom's message and share with other people, and it's helped so many people. So, Amanda, you gave us a big upper at a weekend of a funeral that was sort of a huge downer. So thank you. And Robert, since we have Amanda, let's say hi to her. And I'm so excited to meet you, I guess not face-to-face, but over the phone.
Hello, hello, David and everyone. How are you?
Awesome. So how cool is this, right? You sent me an email, and now here we are 3 days later on a phone together.
I know, it's amazing. You happen to be one of my heroes, so thank you so much. And, of course, Grandma Bach as well. You wouldn't be who you are without her, and the same goes for me. I wouldn't be me without you and her. So thank you so much. It's really been such a pleasure to follow you over the years, and to just always have hope in my heart that no matter what I do, I will be able to do it well, because I have more knowledge, and I feel like the more knowledge that I've been able to accumulate over the years, particularly with finance, has set me up for success in so many ways.
So, first of all, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And thank you so much for giving me back the love, right? Because like that, I always say in my books that it's your stories that juice me. And so thank you for giving me that energy. And I would love to know some more about you. Like, you know, a lot of people, they get a book, they might not read it, or they read it but they don't take action. What happened
sure.
to you? What triggered you to go, okay, you know what, I can follow through on this, I can do this? And actually go from a position where you were in an abusive relationship to breaking free of an abusive relationship and then going for your dream life.
Sure. So I'm trying to think, when you had first published Smart Women Finish Rich, I received it for a Christmas gift from my mother. And I put it on the shelf in my apartment with the abuser, and I thought like nothing of it. I was like, oh sure, like anything could help me at this point in my life. I was very depressed, and then I started really just working hard towards putting my life back together, and I pulled the book off the shelf a year after she'd given it to me for Christmas. And so I started reading it, and I like could not put it down. I have not really had that experience really with many books, and especially a financial book, because I mean I really just thought like this is a joke, no one can help me, blah blah blah. Well, it could help me, and it did help me. I read it like a novel. I put everything to practice that you had said, because previously at 18, before I had read any financials, I did start a 401k and was putting in maximum. So I had a little bit of a fund that was helping me, but not in the present because I had terrible credit. So I actually used post-it notes, and I'd post them all over the place, at work, in my car, on the window, the mirror in the bedroom, and it would say, like, how much money I needed to save in 401k in my savings account, pay off my debt. So I had like this system going. So I was investing in myself through education also. I put myself through school after working a full-time job. I'd go at night and take 3 classes at the community college. So I just like really started to pump myself up. But it was because of your wisdom through Grandma Bach also that I just was like, okay, I got to put this to practice, because if David's taking women that are rolling in to his parking lot at his office and they have shopping bags full of receipts and nothing to show for themselves other than a Mercedes that they can't even afford, I was like, I can do this. Like, I'm there, but I'm not there. So, so I was young. I was in my early 20s, and I, the magic number, this is what I didn't tell you in my email, but the magic number was $2,000. I had paid off all of my creditors, because I was the type, I learned from family, like, don't talk to creditors, don't look at your bills, like, put your head in the sand. And that didn't make any sense after I read your book. I was like, oh, you have to talk to them. You have to make deals with them if that's what it comes down to. You. So I cleaned up my credit. I got a soaring credit score after a while. And I just basically, like my email said, pulled myself up by the bootstraps thanks to grand wisdom. It was amazing.
Well, and you know, you did see the $2,000. And you know, it's interesting that you said save $2,000 and finally break free of the abuse that I endured for way too long. It gives me the chills, because $2,000 is not a lot of money.
No.
And yet that's all it took for you to feel secure enough, obviously, to get out of that relationship.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I don't know if anybody else has listened to this that is in an abusive relationship, and if you are in one, you should leave. But I found over time that a lot of times people think, oh, I need to have $100,000, or I need tens of thousands of dollars.
No.
What I've learned is a lot of times it's just $1,000 that can get you free from a bad situation.
And
so
sometimes it's negative $2,000 that you still need to get out, and then you can figure your finances out later. Because it's really not about the money. It was about the confidence that your wisdom had given me.
Well, I would give you a hug if I could, so consider yourself virtually hugged.
Thank you. I could talk
to you for an hour.
I know.
And I'll probably want to talk to you again at another time,
Thanks.
But I want to make sure I give other people on this call
a
chance
please.
To talk. So,
thank you so much.
Thanks for
blessings
getting on the call, though.
Everyone.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's great to meet you.
Great to meet you.
All right,
as well,
so Robert, you're awesome, man. I want to answer. I want to answer two. I've got a bunch of emails that came through, but I want to answer two of the emails, and then I want to go open these phone lines up. And I'm going to do my best to answer these questions as quickly as I can, because they're really great questions, and they're also generic enough that I think everybody can relate. So let's just see here. Donna, I'm not going to give you out your last name, and Donna, if you're on the call, I'm happy to also talk to you. But Donna, I think your situation is not unusual. So Donna wrote to me, and she said, so I'm so ashamed to say I sold all my mutual funds in my IRA before the election because I was afraid of what the markets would do if Trump won. Never imagined the markets would go up. Believe me, Donna, you are not alone. I have been afraid to re-enter the markets because now I fear the market is headed for a crash. Believe me, Donna, you are not alone. I am sitting on $175,000 in cash. I also retired at the end of December. I have a decent pension and money in my TSP, almost $400,000. What to do with my IRA? I'm leaning towards a wealth front account. I just don't want to have to worry about it anymore. Would you agree? Okay, let me answer this question generically. And then also, Donna, try to address you. So, again, your situation where you got scared off by what happens if Trump gets elected, you're not alone. A lot of people did. A lot of people sold heading up to that market. That's also one of the reasons why the market was probably where it was. So there was a lot of people selling, so you're not alone. You're also not alone that people who sold, the problem with timing the market is you have to time it right twice. So even if the markets had gone down, you would have had a hard time knowing, well, when do I get back in? Because when markets go down, typically if you sell, you still don't know when to get back in. So the problem with timing the market is it's you have to time it twice. You have to time when you're going to sell, and you have to time when you're going to buy. So what do you do in a situation like this where you went to the sideline, markets have taken off, and now you just don't know when to get back in? Well, first of all, what's really critical in your particular question, in your situation specifically, is that you retired in December. So if I'm reading your email correctly, you just retired, which is probably another reason why you were even more fearful of the markets. I think it's very normal. And now the question is, how do you go back into the markets? And I will tell you, as somebody who just retired, I don't know how your account was invested, but going back into the markets like this now that you've gone to cash when you are retired, you really should be sitting down with a fiduciary financial advisor who can take a look at your overall situation and run you through a risk tolerance test to really identify how comfortable you are with a certain level of risk, or if you want risk at all. You don't necessarily have to be invested in retirement in investments that do have market volatility. You probably need to have some money because I think you're going to need a little bit of growth, but really that's what you need to do here. Putting your money in a robo-advisor like Wealthfront, which I talk about in the Automatic Millionaire. I talk about Wealthfront, and I talk about Betterment, and I talk about Vanguard's robo-advisor program and Schwab's. I go through all the different robo-advisor programs. All of those different investment programs can be excellent and can work. Here's the challenge. If you go to Wealthfront and you just start clicking through the Wealthfront questionnaire, you can easily come back with a portfolio that is way more aggressive than you actually might be appropriate for you. And that's my biggest problem with these robo-advisors is a lot of times it's somebody who's got the amount of money that you have. You really need to be sitting down with a financial advisor who can really walk you through this questionnaire. An example I gave recently, and it's a true story, is that one of my really closest friends, he's a very sophisticated investor, came to me about one of these robo-advisor programs, and the real example was Schwab. He opened an account at Schwab, and he was going to go into Schwab robo-advisor program, and I said, well, look, here's what we'll do. I'll actually get on a conference call with you, and I'll go through the questionnaire with you. And so he filled out the questionnaire. I watched him do it. It came back way more aggressive than it should be. And I said, okay, well, I know how you answer these questions because I just watched you do it, but here's the problem now with the portfolio you've got. Here's why it shouldn't be this risky. Here's what could happen if it is this risky. And so here's what I now need you to do. And I literally took him back through the questionnaire and guided him to more conservative answers so that the portfolio would become more conservative, because it should be. And then I also had to have him go back to the portfolio, because in his case it wasn't an IRA account, and answer the questions a different way because it was coming back with a taxable portfolio and it wasn't selecting municipal bonds. So, you know, that's an example that might sound very technical, but, like, I did that for him in 15 minutes. But he was about to invest seven figures in a portfolio by the click of, you know, eight or nine buttons, and it would have been completely the wrong portfolio. So one thing I worry about if someone's gone from the markets to cash, just because you go into a diversified portfolio of ETFs on a new robo-advisor platform doesn't mean you're going to be comfortable when the market's correct, because even diversified portfolios can still go down significantly. So I think it might be time for you to meet with a financial advisor. So with that, I want to take one more question. Wow, sort of in 30 minutes. I want to do one more question, and then we're going to open up the phone lines. And which one do I want to take here? I'm going to take this one. That comes from Angela. Angela writes, I know David talks about selling your first home, then purchasing another, living in it for at least 2 years as your primary residence, then selling that as well. I have a question about investing in real estate. If you want to continue living in your home, in your first home, what is the best way to get started in real estate? Okay, Angela, that is a great question, and it's interesting because I haven't had somebody ask it this way before. That approach of buying a home and selling it first and then purchasing another, that's only one approach. That's not the primary approach I ever recommend. Normally, if you read The Automatic Millionaire, I tell the story of the McIntyres. Normally what people do, I've seen people do is they don't sell the first home. They buy a home, they rent out the first home, they take a little bit of money out of the first home, and then they go buy the second home, and they move into the second home. Let me just say it again so it's super clear. So they buy a home, like the McIntyres, they bought a home. Let's just call it $250,000 house. They paid the mortgage down. Then they, in their case, they saved some money, and they went and bought a second home at the same price. They rented the first one and bought a second one right down the street. Ultimately paid the mortgage down on both those homes. That's one approach. Another approach is to do kind of, I think, what you're talking about, which is you buy a home, you live in it, you don't want to move because you love your house, but you want to buy another property. Then what do you do? Okay, here's what I see the average investor do. This is the average real estate investor. They buy a home, they pay their mortgage down, they decide they want to stay where they are, they refinance their home, they pull a little bit of money out of their current house, and they use that money as a down payment on another property. And that another property may be another house, it might be a condo, it might be a studio, it might be a one bedroom. Typically, it's a property that's the same value of what they currently live in or smaller. And in my experience, those who make the first entree into starting to be landlords, those who have the most success, typically they are buying another property in their current community. So you see a house go for sale on your street, and it happens to be a house that is not the nicest house on the street. It needs work, but you know the neighborhood. And you're like, you know what, we could buy that house, and we could fix that house up, and we could rent that house, and it would be easy for us to manage because it's right down the street. I see people do that all the time. In New York City where I live, I see people often end up owning two or three units in their current building because you know in New York we know our buildings so well. And so you see a property come available in your building, or you hear about, you know, your neighbor selling, or you're in the gym in your building and you find out that someone's about to put their property for sale, and you turn around and you buy something else in your building. I'm telling that story, and that's almost verbatim what my wife and I just did. We live in Manhattan. We live downtown. We had an investment property uptown. My wife was getting ready to need to put like $300,000 into the investment property to fix it up because all this stuff was 20 years old and it needed to have all kinds of new electrical and new pipe and just a bunch of stuff that is not fun to pay for. All the interior guts of the property. And I looked at her and I said, you know, that's just crazy to spend $300,000 fixing this property up just to get the property to be rentable. The property won't go up in value that much. Why don't we buy something else? Why don't we sell that property and buy something else? It doesn't need the work. And in our case, we did a 1031 exchange so we didn't have to pay taxes. And we ended up buying another investment property, another apartment in our current building. And classic is, again, knowing what's in your backyard. We know this building cold. We know what everything sells for. We know what everything rents for. In this case, the property wasn't even listed. But we're like, you know, let's just see if anybody is interested in our building selling a unit in this certain price range, in this certain size. And sure enough, we found two people who had properties in our building that were not listed, and we were able to do a direct deal. And then in this case, we were able to buy the property, and the person who owns it doesn't want to move. They wanted to rent it back for almost a year from us, but they wanted to get their money out. So, I don't know, that's a long answer to your question, but those are some great approaches to getting yourself into your first investment property after you've bought your first home. So let's do it. Let's open these call lines up. And Robert, why don't you tell everybody how they get queued up? I think you know the instructions that they need.
Absolutely. So basically, guys, here's how this works. You're going to go ahead on your keypad, and you're going to hit the star key, and then you're going to hit the number 2. And when you hit star 2, what that's going to do is that's going to put you in a queue on my screen. And for a lot of you guys, I don't have your name, but I do have the general area that you're calling from and your area code. So I see one person just raised their hand right now by hitting star 2, and you're in New York City. It looks like your area code 917. So 917 in New York City, you are about to be on the call with David. If you can hear us, go ahead and say hey.
Oh, great. Can you hear me? Is it me?
Yeah. Yep, that's
hi,
you.
My name is,
hi there.
Hi there. My name is Mecca Simmons, and I am calling because I've bought 3 foreclosure properties. One I'm living in New York, it's a co-op, and I don't have a mortgage. It's mortgage-free, but I do have a HELOC. I took the money out to buy the other two properties. The one in South Jersey I bought was a Fannie Mae. The one I live in was a Freddie Mac. The Fannie Mae one, I took a hit on it. I bought it in South Jersey. I bought it in the hood near Camden. You know Camden. But anyway, the third one I bought near the University of North Carolina is a rental, 2-bedroom, 2.5 baths. I have a property manager. She takes care of everything. My questions to you are... I want to sell the one I'm in. I'm in a co-op. They don't allow us to rent it. Well, I think we're only allowed to rent for like a year or two. I want to sell it, but I was thinking about doing a gap mortgage, but I don't know if I can do a gap mortgage if I don't have a mortgage, but I have a HELOC, and then because I want to buy a piece of property either in Jersey or Westchester County near the water. And then my second question is, I'm thinking about becoming a real estate agent and redirecting my career. I plan on getting a license by next month, and I'm taking some mortgage banking, introduction to mortgage banking courses before the end of this month. Thanks.
Good for you. Wait, tell me your name again.
Mecca, M-E-C-C-A, Simmons. And by the way, when I worked at Morgan Stanley, they made your book, which you probably already know, Smart Women Finish Rich, required reading for all the female financial advisors, even though I wasn't a female financial advisor. I don't know if you knew
okay.
that.
You know what's funny? It's funny because, number one, I did not know that. And number two, what's really classic about that is that when I worked at Morgan Stanley and I put that book out, they, at the time, made me take the name Morgan Stanley off the cover. So I used to have my bio. You say David Bach, Senior Vice President of the Bach Group, Morgan Stanley. And at the last minute, when the book was ready to go to print, one of the executives made a decision that they didn't want me. They didn't want it to be that. They didn't want the name, their name, on the book. So they made me take Morgan Stanley off the book. And then, you know, after the book became hugely famous and popular and helped all these people and hundreds of thousands of women went through the program, when people would go to Morgan Stanley to, like, go through training programs, they would say, you know, David Bach, author of Smart Women Finishers, worked here. So that's a great story. I did not know that, and I'm super happy to hear that. I will say, ultimately, Morgan Stanley was hugely supportive, and they helped. We trained thousands of advisors around the country to teach our seminars, and so that was one of the big ways that we reached so many women. So that is really cool to hear. So let me just say this. First of all, congratulations to you on all the amazing things that you have accomplished. I think the fact that you want to make a career change and go into real estate, I can hear in you the passion is clearly what you love to do and your purpose, and you should absolutely do it. Being a real estate agent, especially one who has real estate investing experience, is a huge leg up. So many people who go into real estate have no investment experience. They're just selling the real estate. They don't actually – I meet real estate agents who don't even own their own home. So as somebody who's already made all these investments, you are in a position to come from true experience, which is rare, and that's going to make you even better at what you do. So I would just, first of all, say you should go for it and make it happen.
Thank you.
I will tell you. Yeah.
I'm sorry. One of the attorneys at MetLife, I did an internship. He did tell me I should consider becoming a real estate advisor. But anyway, I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. And then, you know, and also I'll just tell you from personal experience, my wife spent 20 years in publishing and made a career change over three years ago. She went into real estate. She works at Corcoran here in New York, and she's killing it. I mean, she's doing so well, and she was able to take all of her job skills from selling advertising, and she just completely made a complete career change. Had no, you know, I'm the one who's passionate about real estate. Now she's passionate about real estate, but she has just done phenomenal. And you know, the beauty of New York is that things are so expensive that when you sell something, you can make just a lot of money. So I say go for it. And then here's what I'd say about the co-op. again, I want to make sure I save time for a lot of other people, but with the co-op, I personally do not like co-ops. You know the whole situation in New York. Everything you just said, the problem with the co-op, there are all kinds of issues around renting the property. There are all kinds of issues around selling the property. So when people say to me, what do you think about me selling the co-op, typically I'm in favor of selling co-ops because I think that you are much better off to invest in a condo or something that does not have co-op issues that allow you the freedom to rent it and sell it. And also the value of condos and individual properties that are not co-op related tend to go up in value more in New York than the co-ops do. And the co-ops, you know, that's how real estate was for a long, long time in New York, but that's not how it is anymore. So I hope that's helpful, and I totally appreciate you being on the call with us today.
What are your thoughts on the gap mortgage, though?
You know, that I can't answer because I don't really know anything about that type of a mortgage. I can't really give you the answer on that one.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Bye.
And thank you so much for that great question. And I've got, let me take a look here. The name on your caller ID may be wrong, but John from Massachusetts, 508 area code. I'm going to unmute you here, and if you can hear us, then if your name's John, go ahead and say hey.
Hi, this is Mary. I think that's my husband.
Let's see your husband's name.
Well, hi, Mary. Welcome.
Thank you, David. I'm a huge fan. I've been following you since you started.
Thank you.
I usually do, you know, the boring investments, and we own a house. But there's been a lot of hype about gold and rolling your 401k into gold. And I just wondered, do you have an opinion on that?
Ah, I love gold, as long as it's around your finger or your neck.
Okay.
So, now that's an old joke. I've been telling it for 23 years. But literally, like, I learned that from my father, who would teach investment classes. Gold is ultimately not an investment. It is jewelry. Or it is a slight hedge position that you put into a portfolio. And when I mean slight hedge position, like, when you build out a diversified portfolio, like we do for our clients, there are times that we allocate maybe maximum 3% of our allocation into a gold or commodities position. And it is truly there as just a small little hedge in case of inflation, and because some clients say, well, I'd really like to have a little bit of gold. But gold is very speculative. It doesn't pay dividends. And, you know, you're always hearing about these gold IRA accounts, and you're usually hearing about them on radio shows, right? Like, it's either on radio, it's usually conservative talk radio, because that's who pays for conservative talk radio is a lot of these commodity IRA accounts. And there's a lot of problems with, you know, taking all your money. First of all, putting in gold. Gold hasn't done that well, ultimately. I always say by the time that people are hearing about buying gold, it's too late to buy gold. Gold has really gotten hit, and now it's just starting to come back up a little bit. But I will just tell you the safest thing you can do is never, if you're ever going to consider putting money into gold, don't do one of these deals where you buy the actual gold itself or the bars or the coins for multiple reasons. Number one, when you do, it's not liquid. It's very, you have to have it stored. The cost of buying the gold and storing the gold, which is such a scam, is usually 10% at least. You go buy gold coins. You know how hard it is to actually turn around and sell gold coins? Like, it's a huge problem. So if you're ever going to buy gold, the only way to buy gold is to buy it through an exchange-traded mutual fund. And the biggest exchange-traded mutual fund in gold, the symbol is GLD. And even then, I'm telling you right now, if you're going to build a diversified portfolio, you should never put more than, I'd say, maximum 5% position in gold.
Okay.
How's that?
That's fantastic. And I guess if it's probably a good time to get a financial planner if we are going to have an inheritance.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the size of the inheritance. But I tell people typically, once you start getting to a point where you have over $100,000 in investable assets, and that's real, you know, that's a lot of money, then definitely you should be sitting down and doing your research, and don't just go meet with the first advisor and get the referrals and look for a fiduciary and do all the, you know, all the things that are in my book about how to pick a good financial advisor. Go through the process of interviewing multiple financial advisors, and if you've been reading my books, you should be so knowledgeable that nobody can take advantage of you. And that's really the single most important thing, is that you find an honest, ethical financial advisor. You know what it's costing to work with them, and they're totally transparent on the fees. They're completely transparent on conflict of interest, and they should be coming to you with a real financial plan or a real, not just a product sale. Does that make sense? They're not there to hawk something to you.
Okay. All right, that's fantastic. Well,
so I'm curious, you said you've been following me my whole career. How did you first find out about me? Do you remember?
You know, I don't remember. I read a book a week, so
wow.
I'm always interested. I've always been interested in savings. My father was very much like your grandmother. So I started very young, and I just, you know, got your books as they came out. And I give them for gifts to all my young nephews and my niece. And I don't know, I guess I'm just big on your philosophy. And I actually saw you in person at a seminar in Boston several years back.
Was it a homeowner seminar, or was it actually a regular investment seminar? Remember?
I'm trying to think. I think it was through a mortgage company, and
okay.
We all had to, we found out, I can't think of it. Our credit score, and I had the highest credit score in the room. It was
just
a fun little thing.
Well, that's awesome. Well, you know what? It's nice to now meet you on the phone. That was a great, I remember that event. That was a huge event. I think there were thousands of people at that event.
It was great.
Well, listen, it's so nice to meet you again on the phone, and thank you so much for being a loyal reader, and thanks for passing my books out to your nephews. And the book to definitely, I always say the book to pass out to the young people is The Automatic Millionaire. That's the book to get them going on.
Yep.
So, listen, thank you. Have a great night. I appreciate you being on the call.
Thank you so much, David.
Bye-bye. You are so welcome.
Awesome. And, David, I think we have time for maybe one or two more here. Because we're coming right up on time. So right on the heels of our last one, I have someone from Alabama, and your caller ID probably got your name wrong, but it says Jim on it, and your area code is 256. So if you can hear us, go ahead and say hey.
Hey, this is Jim from Birmingham, Alabama.
Hey, Jim,
awesome.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. I have a question about reverse mortgages.
Tell me your question. First of all, how old are you?
I'm 71 last week.
Congratulations.
And I was just curious about the first. It sounds too good to be true. I know I see these TV commercials with the guy from Blue Bloods talking about the loan program. So what is your opinion on reverse mortgages? Is that a good move or not?
God, you know, this is a tough one for me to answer. And it's tough because, in general, I don't like reverse mortgages. The products have been traditionally very complicated, often confusing, and people have been taken advantage of. Now, that's an oversimplification and generalization, what I just said. So I also recognize that the reverse mortgage space has become better regulated. A lot of the bad reverse mortgage players are now no longer in the business. And I do think that ultimately, as we go forward, reverse mortgages will become more of a standard lending product. But I'm still not totally comfortable with them. I'd say 95% of the time when I've actually done real financial planning for people and they've looked at reverse mortgages, the negatives have outweighed the benefits. So, you know, but just kind of to go through the concept of reverse mortgage, let me ask you this question. What is it about a reverse mortgage why are you even considering a reverse mortgage? What's your current situation?
My current situation is great. I have almost $300,000 in stock, part of that's an IRA. Oh, it's at a, let's see, $175,000 in my IRA brokerage and $110,000 in my TD Ameritrade account, which
and
is not in an IRA.
Okay, and how much equity is in your home?
I have two, one that is a rental and one I live in. Probably about $70,000, probably both of them at least.
Well, so you've got a lot of different ways to go about. First of all, you have plenty of cash, right? So, I mean, I would think that the reason you would be doing a reverse mortgage is you're trying to increase your monthly income. Is that what's going on?
Yeah. Yes.
And how much are you trying to increase your monthly income by?
Oh, sure. I mean 1,000 and 2,000.
Do you have anybody that you'd want to inherit? Like, do you see yourself wanting to stay in this property?
I'm sorry?
Do you see yourself wanting to stay in the home that you're currently in?
Yes.
And is the reason you're not taking $1,000 more out of your IRA, why are you not taking it out of your IRA account, as an example? You got $300,000 in your IRA account. What, is there a reason you can't take another $1,000 a month out of the IRA account?
I don't like to pay the whatever the fee is for federal taxes.
Oh.
Is it 10%?
Okay. 20%? Well, no. First of all, you're 70, so there's no penalty for taking money out of your IRA account. There's just taxes. So
right.
I don't know what your tax bracket is, but your penalty days are gone. I mean, in fact, you're 71, so you actually have to start taking out money at 70 and a half. This is the
right.
year you have to do what's called an RMD of a required minimum distribution. So I don't even know. Have you calculated? Have you done an RMD distribution yet?
No.
Okay. All right. So let's, Jim, you know what we're going to do? We're going to focus you in on that right now because that's the most important thing for you to get from today's call. And it's good for anybody who's listening who might be older like you who's up at this age range. 70, by the way, 71 is today now young. It's like today is like being 50. But according to the IRS, it's now time for you to start taking money out of your IRA account because they want to get paid. So at 70 and a half, you have to do what's called a required mandatory distribution. You should go to irs.gov and type into the search bar required minimum distribution, and it will take you to the section of the IRS website where you can they can help you with the form, calculate your RMD amount. It's going to run about, I'm going to be generic here, but it's going to be about 4% of your overall IRA account. And so you're going to have to pull that money out this year probably. And if you don't pull it out, very important that you know this, if you don't pull it out, you're going to get hit with a huge penalty. The penalty that you can get hit with is 50% of the money that you didn't take out that you were supposed to take out. So I would go look at that immediately because once you take your RMD, you may then have all the income that you need and you don't need to go do a reverse mortgage.
Okay.
I love your
books. I was like, got the new one that came out, I guess, last week or 2 weeks ago. It's crazy.
Awesome. Thank you very, very much. Well, I really appreciate you being on the call and appreciate you being a reader and excited that I could help you out on something as simple as this, but so important. I might have just saved you $6,000 in penalties this year.
What, real quick, what was the name that I was doing the IRS?
You go to irs.gov and put into the search section required
right.
minimum distribution.
Okay, got it.
Yep.
Required minimum. All right, thank you.
You're welcome. You know what? I know we're down to I got six more minutes here. Should we take one more?
Yeah, why not? Let's take one more. Let's see. I've got one in the queue here from Ohio, area code 740. I think your name is Beverly, but I'm not positive. If you're on the call, give us a shout.
Hi, my name is Randre.
Awesome.
Randy, nice to meet you. It's like Beverly,
nice
only
to
totally different.
Yeah. I get that a lot. A lot of people think my last name is my first name.
Well, welcome.
Tell
me your question.
Yeah.
or comment.
I was surprised I got to talk to you, actually. I'm a big fan of yours. And
thank you.
I really, just reading one of your books helped me to get out of a master's degree loans. And so I'm just really, really excited to talk to you.
Which book you read, out of curiosity? You remember which one it was?
The Automatic Millionaire.
Okay, cool.
And it was,
all right.
It was the principle of the snowball effect that actually
helped
me to get out of debt. And so I'm truly grateful for that. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
And,
tell me your question.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really basically just starting out with learning about investing. I was never really raised to learn about investing. So, you know, once I got out of college, it was really when I first started, like, getting an interest in money and investing and things like that. And so right now I switched jobs, and I had some old accounts with money in them. And my wife does as well. She quit, and she has some in old accounts. And so I was wondering, is there any advice as far as where to put that money? Or do I just leave it in those accounts?
Okay, so let me just make sure I understand this. When you say they're old accounts, do you mean they're like in old 401k plans from previous employers?
Yes, like state pension plans. And so they're just sitting in there. And I know sometimes you advise to transfer that over into another, like an IRA or something like that. And I wasn't for sure if that's something I do, if I put it in like an IRA, a traditional IRA or a
I'm going to give generic advice here because I don't know where your money currently is exactly sitting in. But so look at this as being like educational, not specific to you, but it'll hopefully be helpful. So normally speaking, when people leave employers, for the most part, I usually recommend that you either do an IRA rollover, so that you move the money from a 401k plan into an IRA account so you have complete control over the money. Or I recommend that you move it from your former employer to your new employer. So you go from one 401k plan to a new 401k plan. So I'll just kind of go through the two different options and why I recommend people usually move their money. What happens a lot of times is that people leave jobs and they leave multiple, you know, most people today are, over 10 years can easily have three jobs, which means they can end up with three 401k plans or a 403b plan and a 401k plan and a, if you're with the government, you could have a 457 plan. You end up with money all over the place. And when you end up with money all over the place, you usually do a very poor job of, one, following it, and two, managing it. So I've seen in the real world when people put their money, if you take all the money and you consolidate it and you put it into an IRA account and you do an IRA rollover, because that way you won't pay tax on the money. You don't want to take the check. You want to do a direct, what's called trustee transfer. So you'll go to a financial service company. They'll help you do the paperwork. They'll help you move the money from your old 401k plan to your new IRA account. There won't be any taxes on it when you do it correctly. And then you can invest the money however you want. You don't have to use just the mutual funds that are in your 401k plan. And I'll give you examples of, like, some of the biggest 401k providers. Example, Fidelity. Let's say you have a Fidelity 401k plan. If you're super happy with Fidelity, you can call Fidelity up, and Fidelity can switch you from a Fidelity 401k plan into an IRA account at Fidelity. And so you don't even have to go work with a new firm. They have an entire department that's all they do is these IRA rollovers. And in many cases, you can even get the same investment. So I would, in most cases, again, generically speaking, not knowing your current situation, recommend doing the rollover and consolidating the IRAs too, so that you don't have three, four, five IRA accounts, but you put it all into one IRA account, and then you diversify it. And then it's very easy to manage, and you can, you know, you don't have your money sitting at an old employer where you no longer work.
Okay. So is there one over the other as far as the type of RA?
Oh, wait, then the article, no, well, here's the other thing I'd say. So why would you roll it over from your current plan to your new employer? The only reason you would do that, or the primary reason, is that you think you want the ability to borrow out of your 401k plan. That's the one benefit of a 401k plan. But I don't recommend borrowing from 401k plans. So even though it's a benefit, I don't recommend doing it. And then the last thing to answer your question, if you are in a tax-deductible 401k plan, you're going to need to do an IRA rollover to a tax-deductible IRA account. If you do a rollover into a Roth IRA account, then you're going to get hit with taxes on all that money, and I don't suggest you do that. So I'm not a big believer in doing conversions. Wow. Listen, thank you so much for being our last caller and for joining us. And I'm going to need to kind of wrap this up and say goodnight to everybody. Robert, what I'd like to do is, if you can, just maybe open the line up so I can just say thank you to everybody and people can say thank you back. And then we'll say goodnight and everybody have a fantastic evening.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Everyone is on right now.
Thank you.
Hello. David Bach was in the house.
In the house.
Yeah.
Hi, David. Well, this is Nana.
Hi.
Hey,
everybody. Thank you. I have to say, I'm able to see virtually the numbers of who started on the call and who stayed. And the amazing thing is, every single person who started on this call looks like stayed because the numbers stayed exactly the same. So I'm impressed with all of your commitment to learning even more. And I'm super, super grateful that you guys were all here. And, you know, we'll send you guys out an email. I hope you're getting you must be getting my Three Bullet Sunday or you wouldn't have been here. So thank you for reading Three Bullet Sunday. Thank you for being a part of my community. And thanks for showing up tonight. Robert, thank you for doing an evening event here with me and making this all happen.
Thank
I really appreciate
you.
It.
I just want to say thank you to all of you guys as well. It's really been a pleasure, and I really appreciate all your dedication. And we see it here. So I will see you in behind the scenes, and you guys will get a copy of this recording from me in a couple of days here as well if you want to listen back to anything.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Have a great night, everybody. Appreciate it. Be well. Bye-bye now.